This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
That's Priest. All right, let's go down to Los Gatos with Donnie down at the Black Watch. What's up, Donnie?
Hey, what's up, Rick? How's it going, man? I had a couple things I wanted to discuss with you. Mm-hmm. The first being, you know, real quick, people kind of ragging on us not, you know, drafting Bol Bol. You know, my idea is, you know, I don't know how tall he is, 7'7", whatever. I don't think, you know, Bol Bol would really fit with the Warriors, you know, kind of defensive scheme and small ball type of vision, you know. I can't imagine Bol Bol out there in the last 5 minutes in the fourth quarter, you know, switching onto a guard, guarding Chris Paul or Kyle Lowry, you know, in the crucial minutes of a closing game. I don't see Bol Bol being able to do that. So, you know, we already kind of have the chance of bringing back DeMarcus Cousins. I think that's enough. I don't really, you know, kind of see the value of someone like Bol Bol.
All right. I can see your point. Fair enough. What else you got?
Yeah. My second point, you know, I think maybe a low risk, you know, maybe high reward move. My dad laughs at me a lot when I say this, but I think maybe the Warriors should consider bringing on Carmelo Anthony on a...
No.
Minutes? You don't think so?
No, I don't want... Listen, Carmelo is one of the most pure scorers I've ever seen in my life. I remember I watched him in a tune-up game, USA versus China, at the Coliseum before they went down to Rio. And it was just, and there was nobody at that game. I was sitting practically on the floor, and he's just such an amazing shooter. But and I don't mind his personality. He's a pretty quiet guy. But for some reason, it's just poison. I don't see him fitting in.
Yeah, no, that's a fair point. I was just hoping maybe kind of like a JaVale McGee, he could, you know, revive and just, you know, put some spot minutes. But yeah, I don't want a cancer on the team, so I see your point.
Well, yeah, I don't think he's a cancer. It's just, I mean, remember Lynn Sanity and in New York, and he said, when I get healthy, Lynn Sanity will end, and he won't take shots anymore. And that's exactly what happened. He got healthy, and Lynn Sanity ended. You know, it's about Carmelo. Now, listen, if they're really desperate for shooting, he would have to come in. I mean, if they're going to give if they're going to give Cousins 6.5, 5.5, what they have left in the mid-level exception, he'd have to come in on a veteran minimum. If Carmelo Anthony agreed to come in on a veteran minimum, maybe I would look at him, but I would still be like, I don't know.
Yeah, fair enough. And then my last question is, if we do get the disabled player exception, you know, I think it's like $9 million, somewhere around that. If KD is in doubt, you know, ruled out until July or June 15th, whatever it is, who would you sign with that money?
Well, there's a litany of players, but I would sign somebody who can score. I mean, they need scoring so bad. When there's no KD, you think about, remember when in the playoffs when the KD and Clay were hurt and Steph said, there's 50 points right there we don't have. I almost wanted to say, no, there's 60 points right there that we don't have. They need people who can score. Hey, Donnie, thanks for the call, man.
Yeah, definitely. No problem. Thanks for having me.
All right, Rick Tittle with you on 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1, San Francisco, or radio.com sports station. We have two more hours left. We've got Chris Tapasso. We're going to talk a little football at 3:20. Mark Abagna is our buddy from Channel 2, been there four decades. He's still going strong, and he'll join us at 3:20 for Tapasso, 4:20 for Mark Ibanez. And then my man Herbs and Spices, 57 of them, he will take over at 5 o'clock. Lines are open, 888-957-9570. Chilton on Body text line, 95795. As I was saying, I really wanted to draft Lugans Dort. Now, I'll raise my hand. I'm a Arizona State fan, and this guy really impressed me as a freshman. It was a huge coup for Arizona State to get him out of Quebec. He is a Quebecois, and he decided a lot of people who grow up where it's very freezing, they do like to go down to Arizona State. And I was with Jay Billis. Jay Billis had him as a first-round pick. No one picked him up. According to ESPN, Dort is on the way to the Oklahoma City Thunder. He already has a full two-way deal, averaged 16 points, 4 rebounds, 2 assists, as I said, as a pure freshman. I really liked him, and I think he's one of those undrafted guys. I mean, you think about the undrafted players of the world. Look at Fred VanVleet, who we just saw. Rajah Bell, Alonzo Trier. I mean, the list goes on and on. The other kid I really liked at Arizona State is Zillin Cheatham, and he's going to go to the Pelicans. This guy was all Pac-12 defense. He blocks shots. He's a forward that I really like. But as I said, there's only 60 spots. You got Zach Norvell from Gonzaga. That guy always impressed the hell out of me. Some people think that he maybe even be better than Rui Hachimura, who went. And I think, you know, I know that D.C., the Wiz got a little bit of heat for that pick. I think they're really going to like Hachimura there. Daquan Jeffries out of Tulsa was a guy a lot of people liked at the guard position. Shamori Ponds out of St. John scored 20 points a game. He couldn't get a draft pick either. There's just not enough. By the way, the Houston Rockets taking a chance on Shamori Ponds. All right, back to the phone lines at 888-957-9570. Jeff in Sunnyvale, you're on 95.7 again.
Hey, Rick. Looking into this Warriors draft, and I don't know what they're going to do with free agency. I still have a bigger question going into this new season. They're not going to lose. I mean, with Green and Curry, they're going to, and starting up this new arena, Chase Arena, they're going to want to win every game possible, of course, just like any other year. And I'm wondering, with no KD, no Clay, Curry's going to have a lot of pressure on him to do even more, especially score. I'm wondering if he's going to be doing more each game every night. He might be averaging, 33, 34 points a night. And I'm wondering if he's time for an MVP season.
Thank you for the call, Jeff. I appreciate it. Well, Steph Curry is I think, always in for an MVP season. Obviously, when Kevin Durant came, there was going to be spreading the wealth. He wasn't going to stick out as much. And I have found over the years, as you might have yourself, that they like to sort of spread that wealth when it comes to MVP. That whoever's the MVP, they don't like giving it back-to-back unless you're Jordan-esque. You know, people said, oh, Harden got it last year. He wasn't going to give it. And even if Steph had, led the league in scoring, they still were going to give it to the Greek Freak this year. Winning 60 games for Fear the Deer in the headlights. I'm not worried about, this guy talking about tanking and saving Dre and Clay for 2021. Will that year ever come? Steph Curry, they're not going to run him into the ground. It's not like Kerr's going to say, well, I don't have Clay till February. KD's on a sign and trade. He ain't going to play here anyway. Whatever happens. So I need you to play 46 minutes every night, and I need you to take 90 shots like Kobe's last game every night. They're not going to do that. The Warriors will operate as they did this year. They will operate as they will need to save everyone when the playoffs come around. I think you'll still see the same minute structure outside of an extra minute or two, perhaps. But that was the thing about, and Kerr found that out as a first-year head coach. What are these guys going to give me? But then you take into account, in the last 5 years, the Warriors have played, quite literally, about 500 games. And they do add up. And Kerr even said himself about the KD injury, and then especially Clay, said maybe this is because we've been playing so many games and people are worn down. I know some people are trying to say, oh, it's the medical staff, and because Chelsea Lane left. Look, did you watch the game? I was at the game. Clay came down weird. He was looking up, and Danny Green's trying to block a dunk, and Danny Green didn't anything dirty. He was just trying to keep a guy from dunking in the finals. It wasn't any kind of flagrant foul. And Clay came down really weird on his left knee, and it went the wrong way and buckled, and he tore his ACL. It has nothing to do, in my mind, with the medical staff. I know someone said, well, maybe they should have worked with him more. You can't strengthen a ligament. You can strengthen the muscles around it. When I tore my PCL, which I didn't even know I have, my politically correct ligament. Sorry, posterior cruciate ligament. That's what it was. But they said, we'll just leave it torn. I know I'm not a professional athlete. I would like to walk around. And they go, no, you got your legs. You got plenty of muscle. Your legs will be, you'll be able to hold it together. So this is why, you know, people say, oh, how could Clay walk back out there and take free throws? You know, how could Joe Thornton play in the Stanley Cup playoffs with two torn ligaments in his knee? Well, you can, if you have enough muscle, you can keep your structure of your knee together. It's just very bad. And then you get cartilage on cartilage. And of course, cartilage doesn't grow back. You know, they cut into your meniscus, that doesn't grow back. By the way, they are working in labs to see if they can get artificial cartilage to grow. How about that? Meanwhile, we're trying to invent vanilla and orange to get into a Diet Coke. You know, priorities. 888-957-9570. Chilton Auto Body text line 95795. Fatty Daddy. F-A-D-D-Y. Fatty Daddy in the 707 says, get Vince Carter on the veteran minimum. Probably not. The 669, which I think is Boogers, Montana. Bull Bull's brother, Basket Bull, is better. Whew. 510, Rick, what do you think about Kerr and developmental players? I think they should bring in another coach that really knows how to develop young talent. Well, listen, what has Steve Kerr been trying to do his 5 years in the NBA? Has he been on some sort of let's build a youth system, let's build for the future? No, that was done. Well, Nelly was just trying to get the record and get a cigar and leave. He would let Keith Smart coach games while he was in a hammock with a bong. And then Keith Smart was there for 5 minutes. And then you still had the Splash Brothers, who Larry Riley drafted, and Mark Jackson got them to play some defense. So Steve Kerr inherited a team that was a playoff team that was ready to go. You can't look at a roster of 12 to 15 guys and say, how are you developing your young talent? What are they supposed to do? Bench KD and not let him play? Look at the rise of Draymond. And then you saw a guy like David Lee take a seat on a bench. You saw at one point Andre Iguodala take a seat on a bench. I think that's not bad when your draft picks can rise up like that. You look at Kevon Looney, who 2 years ago looked like he wasn't going to make the team. And how important he was to the Warriors these last 2 years. How just vital. So I don't think it's some sort of flaw in Steve Kerr's coaching acumen that he doesn't, you know, bring up young players. That's not what the Warriors are doing. As I was just saying to Priest, they're top heavy. They put all their money into these great stars. And I'm glad they did. 5 finals, 3 rings. How can you not be happy with that? The people say, oh, look at Damian Jones. He's always hurt. And Jacob Evans averaged 11 points a game at Cincinnati. He was just the best guy, they thought, at that time. The best all-around player. They didn't draft him thinking he was going to be the third Splash Brother. They just thought he was a guy that had a lot of upside and might be able to help out. And he did, if you remember, in Game 5 in Toronto when Kawhi Leonard was coming down the court and the Raptors were wearing white. And he gets into the lane, he gets double teamed, he turns and he passes the ball to, wait for it, Jacob Evans. And he's the third, even though he's not a king or a pope. Jacob Evans the third because Jacob Evans was wearing a white t-shirt that said Go Warriors or Dub Nation or Strength in Numbers, whatever it was. And this is why in soccer you wear those pennies or those vests to differentiate so you don't pass it to the ball on the wrong team. So I thought at that time that right there. That pass to him, by him standing up in a white t-shirt, he earned his pay for the year. So the Warriors do not have some sort of farm system that is plug and play. Now, they do have the Santa Cruz Warriors. Remember, they used to have a team in the Dakotas, and it was 3 teams together. They went down there. They have that sustainable stadium that's built out of bees bread and balsa wood and everything else that's sustainable. And I think it's made out of actually kale, if I'm not mistaken. But it's a nice new stadium, and they are developing guys. And over the years, you know, if you're in the Warriors media and you're on their email list, every day you get an email saying, Jacob Evans III is up, he's down, he's up, he's down. And they can do that because, you know, in less than 2 hours, you're back in the other place one way or another. It's pretty cool how they've been able to do that. But now we get to a point where they are going to have to develop some guys. And they've got one guy in Pascal, as I said, 22 years old, 5 years in college. I think he's ready to go to the next level. Smiley, Smilagic, Judge Smales, as I call him. He's, you know, he's played in America. He wasn't playing and, you know, he's from Serbia. He was playing in the league, in the G League, against some real prospects. And then this kid out of Michigan, he's got big swag. So, you know, it's unfortunate that the Warriors are going to have to rely on some of these guys next year. But that's just the way it's going to go when you have these really terrible injuries to a couple of your stars. And one star is probably going to leave anyway. So we'll keep our eye on that. When we come back from a break, talk a little football. Chris Trapasso is going to join us from CBS Sports. I'm Rick Tittle. Come on back on 95.7 again.
Now back to 95.7 The Game. Here's Rick Tittle.
I feel like I'm at a rave in Bucharest or something. Welcome back to the show. Rick Tittle with you. Nice to have you with us on a Saturday afternoon. 888-957-9570 to get in. And the Chilton Autobody text line is 95795. It's great to catch up once again with the NFL writer for CBSSports.com, Chris Trapasso. And he wrote a very interesting article yesterday about Jimmy Garoppolo. And one thing that I was reading the article, and it was, I said, very interesting, that the thing that popped out at me that I didn't realize, that his $37 million cap hit is the highest in all of football. I did not realize that, Chris.
Yeah, last year it was the highest in football, and it was kind of just due to the amount of money that the 49ers had. And they said, hey, why don't we front load this contract that, you know, this big 5-year, $137 million contract. Let's front load it and give him a huge roster bonus. It was $28 million last season to just get that money out of the way. And then the next 4 years, Garoppolo, if he lives up, maybe not to be, you know, a top three or a top five quarterback, but if he's just a really good quarterback, the 49ers will be in great shape in terms of the percentage of the cap that Jimmy Garoppolo is taking up each season.
When you look at the guarantee, which was under 50, eighth highest at the position, so as they go forward, that's much more reasonable, you're saying.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, I mean, of course, when the trade happened and then the extension came afterward, like I said, 5 years, $137 million, with, you know, the limited amount of games that we've seen from Garoppolo, that seems like a lot. And it was. But I think still even today, it's, you see that $137 million, and it's still one of the highest at the quarterback position, but the guaranteed at signing was just under 50, like you said, $48.7 million, which basically means, you know, that's the money that they will pay him. And we've seen many quarterbacks go above that. And with guys like Patrick Mahomes and Jared Goff, you know, kind of coming down the pike, that they're going to be quarterbacks that are going to well eclipse that. So when Jimmy Garoppolo is healthy and he's playing well, he might be outside of that top 10 in terms of how much money his team gave him up front and said, hey, you sign your name on this paper, we're going to give you that money. So it's not nearly as big of a contract, even today, as a lot of people think.
Yeah, and I noticed that you talked about the top 10 guaranteed dollars and the other nine, Ryan, Cousins, Rodgers, Wilson, Wentz, Stafford, Smith, Luck, and Foles, and their average quarterback rating of those nine are about 4 points higher. The QBR is about 9 points higher. Now, is this just a stat that is we throw it away? Because we saw in those five games how excellent Garoppolo was 2 years ago. Or is this some sort of an eyebrow-raising thing?
Well, yeah. I mean, certainly those last five games during the five-game winning streak in 2017, Garoppolo was one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. Certainly a small sample size, only five games. But to me, beyond the quarterback rating and the total QBR, which the total QBR says that it kind of factors in more than just passer rating, I'm a big believer in yards per attempt. That if a quarterback's throwing 40, 50 times, but he's only, you know, getting 200 yards, then he's probably not having an efficient day. He's probably not having a good day. In that season, 2017, those five games, Jimmy G's yards per attempt was 8.8, which is like super high. If you're above 7 in a given season, then you're in really good shape. If you're nearing 8, then you're awesome. So to be upwards of 9 is fantastic. And although his completion percentage was a little lower in those first three games last year before the ACL tear. And again, small sample size. It was under 60%. His yards per attempt average was still over 8. And Kyle Shanahan has proven as an offensive mind that whichever type of quarterback he has, he gets that yards per attempt figure to be really high. So to me, if Jimmy Garoppolo just stays healthy, we're going to see a very efficient San Francisco 49ers passing offense.
And you talk about bringing in a guy like Tevin Coleman that Shanahan knew very well in Atlanta. Jerick McKinnon missed all of last season. He's healthy now. They went out and spent a first-round pick a couple years ago on McGlinchey. Staley sticking around. They drafted Pettis last year, but they also drafted a couple more wide receivers. You got arguably the best receiving tight end in Kittle. So this Shanahan offense, it's almost like, I mean, we'll see about the defense, and they've made some great strides, of course, with Ford and Bosa, but the offense really has no excuses to not get it done this year, right?
Yeah, I totally agree. I probably would say that the only thing that they're missing that Kyle Shanahan had in Houston with Andre Johnson and obviously had in Atlanta with Julio Jones is just that, you know, bona fide number one wide receiver. Mm-hmm. But you're right. I mean, the talent that they have is up front in the backfield and out wide for Jimmy Garoppolo is really good. And I find it interesting, too, that the Jimmy Garoppolo trade, when it happened, a lot of people thought that, you know, Bill Belichick kind of gifted the 49ers that it was only a second-round pick, and it was rumored to be that he was going to get the Patriots a lot more than that. And when you really look at these offenses and just what the Patriots have done over the years, the last 5 to 7 years, they create mismatches with their running backs and their tight ends, that it's not even necessarily having a Julio Jones. Really, after Randy Moss, they haven't had that true number one. And I think that Kyle Shanahan and Bill Belichick have a lot of respect for each other. And I'm kind of seeing a similar type of, you know, personnel in terms of Tevin Coleman can come, you know, out of the backfield, catch passes. Jerick McKinnon's the same way. Like you mentioned, George Kittle is probably the best yards after the catch tight end in football. So I think he's kind of taking from what he's seen and maybe talked to about with Bill Belichick and how that Patriots offense has been so efficient that you're not having your quarterback sit back there for 5 to 7 seconds. It's getting the ball out quick into playmakers' hands, and it's not just going to be from the wide receivers.
One more question about the Niners. I know a lot of people around here, you know, you've seen some worst to first. We saw the rise of the Rams under McVay from Fisher, but they're still in a pretty tough division there, and even the Cardinals beat them twice last year. I don't see playoffs for Niners this year. I see respectability, but at best, I think they're a 9-7 team. I'd probably say more 7-9. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm kind of in that same boat. Actually, last year, just going into what we saw, you know, we had just come off that 5-game winning streak for the 49ers with Jimmy Garoppolo. I was really bullish on the 49ers. I actually picked Kyle Shanahan to be the coach of the year. I obviously didn't think that Jimmy Garoppolo was going to get injured. Just because everywhere, like I said, that Kyle Shanahan has been, he has taken guys like Brian Hoyer, the first year of RG3, Matt Schaub. He was the offensive coordinator for his kind of, you know, 2 or 3 year stretch where he was one of the better quarterbacks in the league. He knows quarterbacks, and that is the most important thing in today's NFL. But the NFC is so loaded. I mean, even looking at the, you know, with the Saints and the Vikings and the Packers, there's just so many good teams, and I think you have to be, like you were kind of insinuating, maybe 10-6 or 11-5 to actually make the playoffs. That division, the NFC West, is a lot more intriguing than it was, obviously, with everything that's gone on in Arizona. But just with a healthy Jimmy Garoppolo in his third year with San Francisco, the pieces that they've added on offense and defense, of course, Nick Bosa, Dee Ford, and others. So, yeah, I see them in that 7-9 to 9-7 range. A few bounces here or there could be either way. But again, probably not the playoffs just because the conference as a whole is so strong.
What do you think about Arizona with Kyler Murray and Cliff Kingsbury? Because I kind of feel like they're going to get off to this rollicking start and it's going to be entertaining. And maybe they'll be like 2-2, but they'll score 40 points a game. And then I kind of feel like Kyler Murray is going to get hurt and it's all the fun's going to end. I don't know. Maybe yeah. That's pessimistic, but what do you think?
Yeah, I could see that happening too. I mean, I actually kind of have it in the reverse way that I think it's going to take them some time That Kyler Murray is someone that only was a starter for one season. I mean, we heard that all through draft season. Mm-hmm. He is in the perfect system. He's playing basically in his Oklahoma offense in Arizona, so the fit makes sense. And I do think that offense, Cliff Kingsbury is going to get the ball out of Kyler Murray's hands quickly. They drafted some wide receivers who fit well. Andy Isabella, Hakeem Butler. They have Larry Fitzgerald still, obviously. I think that's going to help out the offensive line a little bit, but it's still one of the worst offensive lines in the NFL. The defense, outside of Chandler Jones, they signed Terrell Suggs this offseason, who's, you know, obviously in the twilight of his career, but there's not a lot of stars on that defense. It kind of looks like a Texas Tech type team, which I think what you just said, you know, they could be 2-2 or 4-4. A lot of fun to watch, but not necessarily a contender just yet. And you're right, Murray, at his size, with how much he runs and that offensive line, once defensive coordinators get some film on him, to me, I think that's when he's going to have some growing pains in his rookie season.
With Chris Trapasso, Rick Tittle, 95.7 The Game. A couple more questions for the NFL writer at CBSSports.com. I remember being at Levi's for the national championship, and I saw Mike Mayock on the field, and he was looking at guys. I didn't realize he was going to draft everybody that was in that game, but we'll see if they work out. Thing is, the Raiders are on Hard Knocks, which Mark Davis didn't want. As a lifelong Raider fan, I think it's going to be tremendous. I'm very curious to see the ins and outs and everything going on. And John Gruden is such a weird, funny, intriguing, enigmatic character. but I also, unfortunately, I don't think the strides on defense have been there just yet. So I do not see the Raiders as a playoff team next year. Do you?
I don't. I think they're a few years away from that. It is interesting, though, to me how after the year of them trading Khalil Mack, trading Amari Cooper, which at the time I didn't like either trade. I thought they should have just paid Khalil Mack, and it probably would have worked out. They did, you know, make those trades and turn them into early picks. Did I love all their selections in the first round? They picked a running back in the first round, Josh Jacobs, like you mentioned, who was in that national title game. Didn't love that. I like Cleveland Ferrell. I think he can be a really good run defender and pass rusher. He's not going to come off the field a lot. But, yes, they are the perfect team for Hard Knocks. Probably as fun and as pumped up, I think, that the whole viewership will have since that Rex Ryan Jets team that kind of made Hard Knocks famous or kind of more in the mainstream, just because of all the different personalities. The offense is going to be better, though, for sure. I mean, with Antonio Brown, with Tyrell Williams, those two receivers are going to help Derek Carr quite a bit. The defense, they've added a lot, and they've still kind of made it a priority to add cheaper veterans that are kind of on their last legs. I think the defense is going to be a problem, but they're maybe not going to be as fun as they were when they made the playoffs a few years ago, but I think on offense we're going to see some more big plays. The offensive line should be a little bit better, but yeah, I cannot wait for them on Hard Knocks with all those personalities.
It's going to be amazing. The other thing I like when I read you is that you're one guy outside of maybe Mel Kiper that is already looking ahead to the next draft. Like, you're the first one who would say, watch out for Yeter Gross-Matos. I mean, you really got your eye on this college, you know, outside of some of these guys that we're not talking about yet. Who are some of your favorites?
Yeah, I mean, first and foremost, I mean, I'm doing that because my main role at CBS is NFL draft analyst. And mm-hmm. They say, hey, look, there's not a huge window for next year's draft, but right after May and June, some people want that. There's not necessarily one specific player. Tua Tagovailoa and Justin Herbert at the quarterback spot, they're going to be the biggest headliners. They're going to, to me, be fighting to be the number one overall pick. Totally different body types. Herbert's tall and athletic. Tagovailoa might be 6 foot, maybe 6'1". He's a lefty. They're both really good inside the pocket. But I think this wide receiver class is going to be the best wide receiver class that we've had since that famous 2014 group that had Odell Beckham and Mike Evans, and Sammy Watkins, Brandon Cooks. Just look around college football. Jerry Jeudy at Alabama, CeeDee Lamb at Oklahoma. Those two, to me, seem like, and we haven't had it. I mean, we didn't have it in this past draft. They look like wide receivers that could go inside the top 10 or the top 5. Like, they're not as sized like a Julio Jones or a Calvin Johnson, But what they've been able to show as freshmen and sophomores has been very, very impressive. And just that group as a whole, I think we're seeing college football, you know, kind of translate to the NFL, that teams are passing the football more, they're spreading it out. Teams don't need two or three wide receivers. A lot of teams are using four and five wide receiver sets relatively often now. So it kind of makes sense that college is just sending a lot of really good receivers into the pros, and next year's 2020 class is just loaded at the receiver spot.
We also know that the NFL is one sport more than any other that changes so many rules, and we're going to get a stricter criteria for pass interference, and they're going to ask officials to stop the game if there's a, quote, clear and obvious visual evidence, unquote, that a pass interference has occurred. And this is all, of course, from the NFC Championship game, Nicole Roby Coleman, Rams Saints. We know about that. And I wasn't even going to bring it up, except we also saw this weekend that Dean Blandino is saying that that's a bad idea because you're making a new rule just for one play, and be careful what you wish for. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I just think it's going to lead to a lot of headaches for people at home watching, and certainly people in the stands as well. Obviously, the NFL probably cares more about how many viewers they get on TV, and we kind of had this, you know, this past season with the lowering your head or driving the quarterback into the ground for those first couple of weeks, where teams like the NFL and the referees were overly sensitive to that, and I think we're going to see a lot of coaches screaming at the refs when they're not getting that review. So I think early on it's going to lead to a lot of stoppages, a lot of rechecks, and probably a lot of plays where the refs do get it right. I think that play in the NFC title game was pretty rare. We don't see refs miss something that egregious. It was kind of bang-bang live, but if you watch the course of an NFL season, that type of miss on a pass interference doesn't happen very often at all. But I think it's going to lead to, just because of that play is still in everyone's mind, and certainly will be for Saints fans, that we're going to see maybe in the month of September just way too many of those stoppages, and kind of like we saw with the driving the quarterback into the ground rule, kind of gets scaled back midway through the season, so there's not as many stoppages and the game flows a little bit better.
Finally, we have a lot of new coaches, as we always do. We talked about Cliff Kingsbury, but you think about President Zachary Taylor, you think about Freddie Kitchens, who everyone thinks is going to lead the Browns to the playoffs, but you still have Matt LaFleur, who I guess that's the one that that Aaron Rodgers wanted. You have Brian Flores. I mean, there are a lot of guys. Adam Gase is now up in New York as well. Bruce Arians is back in Tampa Bay. Which one of these new coaches do you think is going to really hit the ground running?
I would probably say Bruce Arians in Tampa Bay. I mean, he's done it before. He was an offensive coordinator. He was kind of running a ship when the Arizona Cardinals made it to the NFC title game and lost to the Carolina Panthers. But Carson Palmer, at the end of his career, was playing out of his mind under Bruce Arians. And the personnel in Tampa Bay fits perfectly. Jameis Winston's kind of a boomer bust quarterback. Big, strong arm, likes to test defenses vertically, and that is what Bruce Arians loves to do. He's not a West Coast offense type of offensive coordinator, play caller. He wants to stretch the field and stretch it off, and they have Mike Evans. They have O.J. Howard, who has been injured, but in his first 2 years in the NFL at tight end has really been able to stretch the field, high yards per catch. They're going to be a team, I think, similar to the Cardinals, though, because the defense I don't think is going to be there yet, but I certainly trust Bruce Arians and even Jameis Winston more so than Cliff Kingsbury and Kyler Murray. I think, you know, all those other coaches, you know, they're either first-time guys or they're a branch off the Belichick tree, and we've seen how badly that's gone. Adam Gase in New York, I mean, after a really disappointing tenure in Miami when he was given all the control, I just don't see how the Jets saw what he did there and say, hey, let's hire this guy to tutor Sam Darnold, and that's so important. So I think Bruce Arians, his experience and how good he was and how good his teams were in Arizona, along with the personnel on offense in Tampa Bay, I think that new coaching gig is going to be the best one in 2019.
That's Chris Trapasso, and you can follow him on Twitter at Chris Trapasso. Read him online at CBSSports.com. Chris, thanks for coming on. As I say, I read you all the time. Appreciate your work and appreciate your time today.
All right, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
All right, a lot of appreciation going on. By the way, Chris was a guest of the Dialpad guest line. Dialpad helps you make smarter calls. Connect your team with a business communication platform that powers voice, video, messages, and meetings across your existing devices. Lines are open, football fans, as we talk a little football in this segment. Anything that Chris said so evocative as to evoke? Put the emphasis on the wrong syllable. Potato. Anything on your mind? 888-957-9570. Once again, 888-957-9570. You heard it from me. Niners and Raiders are not going to the playoffs this year. Call me up and yell at me. Agree. Whatever you want. 888. To use the French word vent, or as we would say, vent. It means wind. Let's hear you windy people out there in the windy city.
That's Chicago.
888-957-9570. And let's take a look at the Chilton Auto Body text line at 95795. 831, which is Neptune, says, Rick, when can you do a show with the legend Ray Ratto? That would be drip. I did a show with Ray Ratto recently, or a couple months ago. It was on a holiday. I forgot what it was. But I did a show with Ray already. It's over. 510, Rick, speaking of Joe Thornton, your thoughts on the Sharks draft picks? Well, I said I looked at them. I don't know who these guys are. I'm not even going to pretend to know who these guys are. I'm just trying to pronounce their names. They didn't give up. They didn't have a first-round pick. Of course, they gave that up for EK9, which I'm perfectly happy with. You tell me, because I don't know. 408 said, I had my ACL taken out. I don't have one. Redundant. I can do anything except tennis and basketball. So you can do pole vaulting. Anyway, thanks for that. As an ASU alum, I advocated hard for Dort. This is from the 510. He should have stayed in school one more year, but I wasn't shocked that he wasn't drafted. Oh, but I was shocked that he wasn't drafted. Well, I think most of these guys would probably do well to stay in school. You just have to make sure you're a first-round pick. Is the thing. And my two favorite examples of when I just thought it was the dumbest thing I ever saw, and both times, luckily, I was proved wrong, was when Tim Duncan decided to go back to Wake Forest to get his degree as a senior. And I'm like, what are you doing? Why would you go back to college? College is supposed to teach you to make smart decisions. When you're going to be the number one overall pick, that would be the smart decision to make. And Tim Duncan got his degree, and he got rings, and he's going into the Hall of Fame, so it all worked out. Andrew Luck, I want to go back to Stanford one more year. I go, what, you want to ride your bike around the farm in El Camino Real? You want to go to the town and country mall? You want to go to Pali High? Why do you want to go back? You're going to be the number one overall pick, you dummy. And he did go back, and he was still the number one overall pick. Then again, Matt Leinart, remember his whole deal? He stayed at USC because he didn't want to play for a ridiculously terrible organization like the San Francisco 49ers. That was his feeling. They had the first pick, and he just couldn't do it. So he went back, and then they had to pick between Alex Smith and, right under their nose, Aaron Rodgers. And the whole thing about Aaron Rodgers we found out was they thought Aaron Rodgers was a jerk. Well, I don't really care if a guy's a jerk. Who's the better player? And Alex Smith obviously mind his P's and Q's. I think I can deal with this guy a little bit easier than Jerky Boy over there. So, yeah, if you have a chance to be the number one overall pick, then you need to come out. 510, Rick, how many wins do you think the second wild card spot will take? Do you think if the Raiders or Niners manage to win 9 games, they might sneak in? I don't know. I have seen years when a team gets double-digit wins and they don't go in. I saw a year, 85, because I was in Cleveland. The Cleveland Browns won the Central at the time, and they were 8-8. Wasn't the Hugh Jackson collapse? Didn't the Broncos win the West at 8-8? Yeah, I mean, how humiliating. And people have said Tim Tebow can't play in the NFL. I remember seeing Tim Tebow at the Coliseum standing on the field throwing the most precise dimes I have ever seen. That day, I know that Broncos won with their defense, especially with Peyton Manning after that, but man, oh man, that Tim Tebow was excellent that game. It's other people always say, oh, he'll never play, he'll never play. We all saw Johnny Manziel beat the San Francisco 49ers. I don't think that qualifies as could never play. You know, that's why I don't understand when people just, you know, you have a Heisman Trophy winner, and I didn't want Johnny Manziel. He wants to be known as John now, so John Football. I didn't want John Manziel. But to say he'll never make it, how can you say that? You can't say that, can you? I don't think so. 888-957-9570. Let's go down on the peninsula. Ryan is in Redwood City. Go ahead, Ryan.
Yeah, I just wanted to give my thoughts on the 49ers' upcoming season.
Yes? That's it? He's gone. Man. I want to give my thoughts on the 49ers' upcoming season. We're sorry. If you'd like to make a call, hang up and dial again. Text line says Seahawks won at 7-9. Thank you. That's right. They did. 7-9. So I don't know what the number is, but I can tell you if you don't get to 10 wins, your odds are very, very low. I want to say in the 80s, because I used to work in TV with this Bronco fan, and we just drove each other crazy because that was in my 20s, and I felt like arguing with someone, and he was the same. And I believe the Broncos won 12 games, and they did not go to the playoffs because that was a cause for much merriment for me. A lot of frivolity, a lot of mirth. The dish ran away with the spoon. I was doing a cabbage patch and the running man in front of him. I think I had a lot of jape and joy when that happened. And, of course, a nice dose of Schadenfreude. This is my middle name. That whole thing about Dean Blandino, about this new PI rule saying you're making a rule over one play and that can be dangerous. When I read that, the first thing I thought of was the horse collar tackle. That is, and I'm saying this, now I didn't play in the NFL. I played in college as a defensive back. The horse collar is the safest way to tackle somebody from behind for you and the runner. The center of gravity is precariously high. You can really do it with one finger. You put your hand behind the collar, your finger, and you just pull the guy down. If you outlaw that, now you're diving into a guy's legs, which is bad for him, and it's bad for you because you get a heel in your Adam's apple. It's bad for everyone. But T.O., because the guy held on too long and drove him into the ground, and T.O. didn't have his leg out and his cleat got caught and he ruined his knee, now we have a rule that there's no more horse collar tackling. That rule has led to way, way more injuries, in my opinion. It has. It's led to way, but, oh, T.O. got hurt. It's like the Buster Posey thing. No more touching the catcher on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to 95.7 The Game. Here's Rick Tittle.
All right, thank you, boys and girls, Domin and Heron, wherever you are listening. It is Sports Talk on 95.7 The Game. Rick Tittle with you until 5 o'clock. At that point, it'll be Mr. Good for Ball, Bad for Ball himself, Brandon Tierney. I mean, Michael Erb. He'll be just playing with the herbs. Coming up in the next segment, Mark Ibanez will join us in about a half hour. See what's going on over in Jack London Square. It'd be cool if we called him and he was actually bowling at plank when we call him up. This segment is all about you, your feedback, your interaction, y'all's and your calls. Get in the queue and we'll talk to you. 888-957-9570. Some of you say I can't call during the weekdays. You heard the promos on three-man shows we got now. Jolo and Dibs, then Bonte and Guru and Steinmetz. And then Damon and Kolsky and Ratto. I call them the Naughty Nine. And they're having a great conversation, and it's so intriguing and entertaining and informative. But I'm by myself, so lonely. So this is a good time to get in and have yourself heard. And then you can tell everybody, yeah, the other day I called Nick Nipple and Dick Little, whatever, and I told him I was right and he was wrong. 888-95. I know that's how you sound, too. 888-957-9570. Chilton Auto Body text line is 95795. Pats missed the playoffs at 11-5. Yeah, there's another one. Like I said, there are these aberrations that happen. So I said, if you don't win 10 games, your chances of getting a wild card are slim. They're not none, but they are slim. All right, let's go out to Dublin, the biggest city in the world, because every day it's Dublin, and we have Manuel. How you doing, Manuel?
Good. How you doing, Rick?
What's up?
Hey, just kind of a couple random thoughts real quickly. You know, when the Giants won their three, by the way, I'm an A's, the Raiders, Warriors. When the Giants won their three in the 3-5 or whatever it was, 3-7, I don't know what they got. But, and the fans kind of bailed on them, and you could almost kind of see the results now with the product and rebuild. Do you see that happening if we can't get going, whatever we do with the Warriors? I think it's a different fan base, but I want your thoughts. And also, how are you going to deal with the Raiders being in Las Vegas, me being this big guy? I'm going to do the best I can. I mean, with today's, now you can go on and follow them anyway. Now, back when they left in 81, you couldn't, it was hard to get stuff. But how are you going to follow them? And is your heart still going to be a lifelong Raider fan like I am? Kind of just curious about this. I think your question answers off the air.
All right, Manuel, thank you very much for the call. 888-957-9570. Everybody who calls gets in. Well, to answer your second question first, I'm a Raider fan for life. I'll always bleed silver and black. That Raider logo is my family crest. You know, it's the days of medieval heraldry are gone. I don't have a family crest. But I never went to one game in L.A. I stayed loyal the 13 years they were gone. I would love to be able to drop the Raiders like a bad habit or a cheap suit or whatever metaphor you would want. Cliche. But I can't. If they're in my DNA, I can't pretend to not care. And I completely understand people who have cut the cord. I just hope everybody is respectful to each other. You can choose to be diehard and fly to Vegas every game. It's a free country. And have fun, those of you who do. You can say they're dead to me. I completely understand that, too. I'm in the middle. I'll always be a fan. I'll always watch. I'll always root for them. I'll always be excited about the draft and when they score a touchdown, and I'll be mad when they choke, which is what they do most of the time now. But I would die before I step foot in that stadium for a Raider game. I will never get on a plane to go to a home game. You must think I'm pretty stupid if I'm going to fly to Las Vegas to go to a home game. That's just me. But, you know, to pretend I don't care anymore would be a lie, because I will always care and I'll always be a fan. Now, going back to the Warriors with the youth movement, it's you can't really have a youth movement in basketball that it doesn't happen over several years, which we saw right here with Steph Curry and then with Klay and then with Dre. It takes a while. So when you do find those stars, it would be dumb to go ahead and get rid of them and start a youth movement. First-round picks in the NBA are mostly, more times than not, I'd say, you know, in football, more than 50% of your first-round picks are going to be good players. In basketball, I'd say less than 50% of your first-round picks are going to be great players. So when you have that window open with Curry and Dre, who are still in their prime, it would be stupid to go to a youth movement. Jesse in San Francisco. What's up, Jesse?
Hey, what's up, Rick? How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good, man. So I want to hear your thoughts on, I know you were talking earlier about the Niners and why they weren't going to make the playoffs, and I agree with you with that. But I think one of the reasons why I say the Niners won't make the playoffs is because I think the Seahawks and the Rams are better because of the quarterback position. I want to hear your thoughts on that.
Well, thank you for that. Well, I mean, listen, there's no doubt that Jared Goff had a deer in the headlights type of Super Bowl, but, I mean, they were still in it, weren't they? Russell Wilson signed for all the money in the world, and I think he's worth it for what he means to Seattle. And, of course, Pete Carroll's still there. We'll see about the revolution with in the Valley of the Sun with Kingsbury and Murray. But we also saw 2 years ago in those last five games, and you can say, oh, they're garbage time. That Jags game was not garbage time. The Jags were trying to win that game. Jimmy Garoppolo has a skill set that I think is top 10 in the league. I really do. Throwing on the run, accuracy, and all those things he can do. He just learns, he has to just be a little Franco Harris and run out of bounds and avoid contact. He has to. I know that a lot of guys don't like to shy away from contact, but he's going to have to do it. But, I mean, a quarterback, also, you got to have people around you. You know, we've seen some great NFL quarterbacks that didn't have any help. So I don't think what's going to hold the Niners back is their quarterback. What's going to hold them back, I think, is going to be their defense. Let's go to Steve in Berkeley. Go ahead, Steve.
Hey, Rick. I think this is actually your position. I'm not calling in because I agree with you, but I do agree with you. So I thought I heard you say this the other day. 2 years from now, we might not be alive 2 years from now. This talk that everyone on the station is doing about, oh, in the year 2021 and 2021, we'll be back in the pink. That's crazy talk. I mean, we got to talk about the team we're going to build this year for the Warriors and how to move forward. And I'm hoping that KD goes sign somewhere else because we don't know if he's ever playing basketball again.
Thank you for the call, Steve. Yes, not to be some sort of doomsday soothsayer talisman or something, but my point is, listen, if the Warriors didn't have Curry and Draymond and the Warriors' best player was Jonas Jerebko, then I think our expectations would be I don't know what anybody else says here, and they're more than, and this is why we have different hosts. Different coasts. That doesn't make sense. By the way, I thought he was going to say something about the pink and the stink. I'm glad he didn't go there. But I don't know what anybody else is saying. I mean, we're not going to all agree with each other. But I don't think the Warriors are going to win a championship next year. I think there'd be a lot of teams better than them. But to suddenly say that you have Steph Curry and Draymond Green and you can't get to the playoffs, or listen, once you get to the playoffs, anything can happen. But I'm not going to bet on them. You know, why would I bet on them at that point? You know, it's a lot of times you need to see the proof with your own eyes. When Toronto got up 3-1, I thought that Toronto was going to close it out. But I was hopeful that the Warriors, you know, when they got that game and then, man, that last shot. Think about all the things they went through in game 6 with 9 missed free throws and Dre had 8 turnovers and KD's out and Clay goes out. And Danny Green throws that ball away. There's 9.2 seconds left. They have the last shot, and they can win game 6. I mean, it's really absolutely amazing. And I thought if they hit that, they'll go to Toronto, and then all the pressure was going to be on Toronto. But it didn't happen. And you know, I wasn't going to tip my hat until it happened, and now it does. I will doff my Veltkrieg Eins Pikelhäuber to Toronto at this point. They deserve it, and that's fine. But the other thing is, I'm not going to pretend like because the Warriors lost the finals in 6 games that everything's over. That would be pretty dumb to say it's over. The Warriors were within one game of being in a three-peat. Now, if the Warriors were the 8th seed and got trounced in the first round, you might think, ah, you know what, this thing's over. The only thing that ended was the championship run. But to say that the dynasty is over, it just, I mean, it gets into semantics. Like, I think the Giants had a dynasty. They won in 10, 12, and 14. 3 titles in 5 years, to me, is a dynasty. And somebody's like, no, it has to be 3 in a row. Fine. There's no, you can't look into the dictionary and find out the exact meaning of a dynasty unless you look at Qing dynasty and things like that.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.